Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And Leo. And tonight we're going to have an interesting show for you. We got an interview with author Nick Bryant. And anybody who's reading the description of the show tonight realizes that we're going to be talking about the Franklin scandal. It's a story of national pedophile ring involving the CIA, the FBI, Bush Senior White House, Massachusetts Congressman Barney Franks, and other notable perverts. And, yes, you heard me right. George Bush Senior is a pedophile who likes little boys. And we're going to talk about that in the interview tonight. Really, really a sickening thing. It happened during the 80s and 90s.
One of the things that's really sad is none of these people went to prison. The only people that were blamed were the victims.
The victims were blamed and were accused of perjury, however.
Persecuted.
It's
because of power and influence.
Yeah. And also CIA, former CIA director,
Colby
was...
Seriously
died because he of his statements regarding the truth of the pedophile ring, and quite a frightening thing. And
but before we do that, we'll bring you some news.
Yeah. So if you hang on with us for a second here, I will.
Now don't go away. Just give us a few seconds. It's hot up here in New England.
Extremely hot.
Hot and humid.
So.
Let's see what the news is. Worldwide, as we're going through this website, we see a lot of things referring to it.
Oh, I don't know what this was supposed to get for the headlines here. Okay, hang on a second.
We need the headlines.
All right.
Oh, this might be interesting. Let's listen to this. Human race,
yeah,
get off your knees.
All right. Well, yeah, this is David Icke talking. I don't know.
A Project Avalon interview with Bill Ryan. Let's just see what he says.
Yeah, it's about it's an hour and 50 minutes long.
Oh, too long.
I can't do that. But, let's see. Not having a power style, but,
IBM wants to control your car. A patent application filed by IBM engineers reveals the company developing technology that will allow governments to shut down the engines of private automobiles via traffic signals. It's like Skynet, only much worse. Engineers from IBM suddenly feel free from the burden of making computers, are hoping to ruin the driving experiences by handing over the ability to stop and start car engines over to traffic lights, railroad crossing gates, and other transportation signals. Oh, I'm not sure I want all that.
No, me neither.
I think I can stop at a stoplight.
Okay.
That's the patent.
The present disclosure is directed to a method of managing engines in response to traffic signal. The method may comprise establishing communications with a plurality of participating vehicles responding to a stop status indicated by the traffic signal, further compromising receiving a position data from each participating vehicle. Determining
comprising a list of participating vehicles stopped at the traffic signal, determining a remaining duration of the stop status, sending a stop engine notification to the list of participating vehicles stopped at the traffic signal when the remaining duration is greater than a threshold of time, responding to a proceed status indicated by a traffic signal, further compromising, sending a start engine notification to a first vehicle in the queue, circulating an optimal time for an engine of a second vehicle in the queue to start when the first vehicle starts moving, But what happens if you can't afford one of these fancy vehicles and you're still driving an old Subaru like mine.
Or an old Volvo. The goal of the system is to lower fuel usage and optimize the movement of vehicles through intersections by controlling engine operation remotely via traffic signals. I don't like this idea at all. A railroad crossing could sense the vehicle in the general vicinity were going to be struck for a while and would then cut the power to save gas. It's similar to the start-stop system on a few modern cars, but taken to perverse extremes. The patent just covers the method and steps for a system, not the actual communication technology, but it's still scary and impractical in places where someone needs to use their AC. Okay. I don't understand that so much.
Hmm. Well, that's not happening right now, but...
Yeah.
Oh, this is interesting. Jamaica declares state of emergency after Obama demands arrest of Robin Hood drug lord.
It is the sort of one-dimensional story the corporate media loves. A drug-dealing bad guy and his armed supporters fighting against the noble government determined to bring him to justice. As usual, the corporate media only tells one side of the story. For many in Kingston slums, Dudas is a much better provider of political goods, education, security, and food than the state, which translates into the popular support he gets locally. Well, John Robb for Global Gorillas.
Right,
oh, it's John
Robb.
Yeah. Let's see what this is all about. You've seen this on the news recently about this, so.
Mm.
Okay.
Jamaica security forces searched a volatile Kingston slum for an alleged drug lord on Tuesday after at least seven people died in violence triggered by government orders to extradite him to the United States, reports Reuters. Heavily armed soldiers and police went door-to-door to hunt for Christopher Dudas Koch in the Tivoli Gardens neighborhood of Kingston. The United States says Koch is one of the world's most dangerous criminals, responsible for trafficking cannabis and crack cocaine around the Caribbean, North America, and the UK in exchange for guns and money, according to The Guardian. Prior to the Obama administration leading on Jamaica's PM, Bruce Golding, and his Labor Party, Koch enjoyed substantial protection from the government. It turns out arresting Koch will be no easy matter. Oh, feds in the U.S. unveiled charges against Koch last August and accused him of selling marijuana and cocaine in New York and elsewhere and arming his associates with illegally trafficked weapons. The Justice Department lists Koch among the world's most dangerous narcotic kingpins. It turns out arresting Koch will be no easy matter. Gang members attacked police stations in and around Kingston. As it became clear, Koch was a wanted man. In response, the Prime Minister put troops on the streets and declared a state of emergency in Tivoli Gardens, the West Kingston neighborhood or garrison loyal to Mr. Koch, who is commonly known as Dudas and his Shower Posse Gang, reports the New York Times. It is the sort of one-dimensional story the corporate media loves, a drug-dealing bad guy and his armed supporters fighting against a noble government determined to bring him to justice. As usual, the corporate media tells only one side of the story. For many in Kingston slums, Dudas is much better provider of political goods, education, security, and food than the state, which translates into popular support. To the poor residents of West Kingston, Koch is a benefactor who distributes cash, food, and scholarships. They call him Dudas and vote to die for him. Dudas is a benefactor to many people who depend on him to send their children to school, buy food, and most important, settle disputes beyond Jamaica's borders, notes the Jamaican Gleaner. I guess that must be a newspaper.
Yeah.
Nearly 20% of the Jamaican population live in abject poverty, while close to 6% live on less than $2 a day. The working poor average of $50 a week if they are lucky. The government, which spends 48% of the country's GNP to pay Jamaica's external debt, doesn't really make a difference in the lives of the poor who have to depend on charity to survive, writes the Western Catholic Reporter. Former Prime Minister Michael Manley was elected on a non-IMF platform in 1976, but was subsequently forced into Jamaica's first loan shark agreement with the IMF in 1977. In 2001, Jamaica owed over $4.5 billion to the IMF, the World Bank, and the Inter-American Development Bank, among other international lending agencies, the international banksters. We are seeking to get U.S. $1.2 billion from the IMF, and it's not a panacea. The U.S. $1.2 billion is going to stop at the Bank of Jamaica. Not one penny of that is going to go to the Ministry of Finance. That's the nature of the IMF arrangements, PM Bruce Golding declared last December. In other words, poverty will continue in Jamaica and will likely get worse. The country is paying out increasingly more than it receives in total financial resources, and if benchmark conditionalities are not met, the structural adjustment program is made more stringent with each renegotiation, explains Stephanie Black in Life in Debt, a documentary about IMF-imposed poverty in Jamaica. It says, see a clip from the film below.
Yeah, well, to improve balance of payments devaluation, which raises the cost of foreign exchange, high interest rates, which raise the cost of credit, and wage guidelines, which effectively reduce the price of local labor, are prescribed. The IMF assumes that the combination of increased interest rates and cutbacks in government spending will shift resources from domestic
consumption,
right, to private investment, increasing employment, blah, 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 blah,
increased
blah, blah.
Unemployment.
It just keeps going and going and going. But anyway, this guy, this is a long freaking article, and this guy is like a Robin Hood to these people, and we're just screwing them over.
But the IMF is just destroying all these countries.
Yeah.
Here's a little clip on that. See how long that is, that one, a few minutes maybe.
Yeah, 3 minutes.
Let's play
Jamaica
this.
IMF disseminating one country.
Decimating.
Decimating one country after another.
First of all, you go to the private banking system. And you say, well, can I get a private banking loan? Because I'm strapped for cash and need some support and I'm having trouble paying my overseas bills.
When the private banks won't lend to you, then you've got to do something if you're a leader of a country. And typically what you've got to do is to cut back your spending in some way and try and get more money so that the impact of those cutbacks are not as severe as they otherwise would be. And it's at that point that you generally come to the IMF.
What you really need is to sit down with them and say, look, can I work out a 5-year program? And in the meantime, I am strapped for some cash, so can you help me up front get out of the cash bind and then put it in the context of a long-term development plan? And they said, no, long-term development is your problem. We are here only to see who do you owe the money to, why you in a bind, and we'll lend you some money in a very short time frame at full interest rate to get you out of the bind. And they then impose upon you tremendous restrictions in what you can spend.
And then we reach agreement on a set of measures on the budget, on the exchange rate, on monetary policy, on interest rates, on banks, on maybe privatization, and say, yep, we think this could solve your problem.
And you say to them, but if I do it that way, when I finish repaying you, I'm going to be in the bind all over because this can't solve my problem. This is not our problem.
The whole idea was to set conditions which the government could not meet. And when the government failed to meet them, you would have to renegotiate a new loan in which the conditions became tighter. So the IMF didn't say, cut out this education program or cut out this health program. What the IMF said is, you must spend only so much money on health and education. And the implication of that was that you had to cut out some programs.
Essentially, what the IMF wanted us to do was to devalue our currency. That's the first thing, to make our dollar cheaper.
They needed to expand their exports and diminish their imports. And the best way of doing that is to make foreign currency more expensive.
And since our society is so heavily dependent on imported food, imported fuel, imported books to go to school, imported medicine, when we devalue, the cost of those things we import go up to the citizens. And as a result, the economy today is much more under the control of foreigners, not necessarily through direct ownership, but through the mechanism of debt. In the 1970s, we owed $800 million. By the end of the 1980s, we owed $4 billion. Nowadays, we owe $7 billion. So the debt is rising, and all the time the debt is rising, our capacity to export to produce is getting less.
That was taken from Life in Debt, a film.
And Stephanie Black.
Yeah. And,
it's amazing.
Jamaica breaking news, Bruce Gould, tax. We could watch that, but that's quite frightening. Anyway.
I don't know where they're going to get the money from in this country, in that country.
Well, they're not. They never will. It's part of
the game. They're being enslaved.
Yeah. Okay. What in the
world
are
they
spraying? Yeah, Reality Zone. Let's see what this is. Truth Media Production.
I'd like to talk for a minute about an issue that's getting more and more attention. That's the issue which scientifically is called stratospheric aerosol geoengineering, also called the chemtrail issue.
Oh, my God. Looks
like looking over our house.
There's one, two. Oh my God. Is that a strange substance found by a Southwest Arkansas man being part of a government test? Well, that's the question at the heart of a phenomenon called chemtrail, now getting widespread attention.
Well, they say the government is dumping chemicals on us to control or manipulate the weather.
And they say the unusual-looking jet trails in the sky are actually chemical-laden chemtrails.
The survival of the human race, literally, is at stake. The physical survival, the level of health that people will enjoy, the survival of the planet. If you're concerned about the environment, this is your issue. And yet most people have no idea that it's even going on.
It is called geoengineering, fighting global warming by putting a chemical dust in the atmosphere and reflecting harmful radiation back into space.
You could use barium oxide, for example, which makes big fluffy clouds. You could use tiny little bits of aluminum, which is benign in the environment, and essentially manage the climate.
That is not rain. That is not snow. Believe it or not, military aircraft flying through the region is dropping chaff. Small bits of aluminum, sometimes it's made of plastic or even pelletized paper products, but it's used as an anti-radar issue, and obviously they're up there practicing. Now, they won't confirm that, but I was in the Marine Corps for many years, and I'll tell you right now, that's what it is.
And tonight, one woman says the government's own data shows the chemicals are showing up in our drinking water.
This is a multi-billion dollar, if not trillion dollar operation. It's also very damaging, not only to the environment, but also to human health. Because being that it is illicit, if the truth got out to people, think about how damaging could be to their agenda, both political and monetary.
I had a friend who recently, he's always looking at things from a different perspective. He's a bit of a conspiracy theorist, you know. Did you ever see that movie with Mel Gibson?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. He's a lot like that. And he says that whenever the president comes to L.A.,
amazing to try to look through somebody else's eyes. Like my eyes, I can see this so it's like night and day, and other people it's just the illusion is just so deep.
What do you think would happen if everybody awakened to what was going on, what the plans were of geoengineers?
I think they'd have a revolution in Hawaii. If people really understood what was going on.
What's your concern for, I know that you love the land here. What's your concern about chemtrails?
Well, that we won't be able to live here and grow our own food. And that our health is going to be compromised.
Yes. And the thing is that they're doing it every day here, every day. So it's hammering, micro doses every day. And then, of course, it's getting in the environment, and of course, it's weakening the plants. And it takes a couple years for this to actually weaken the plant. So we need, we're asking for GMO taro. We're asking for GMO papaya because we can't grow our natural seeds. We can't be sustainable. We can't truly, you know, be here as God created us to be.
Spraying 100 to 200 million metric tons of aluminum per year into the atmosphere for the stated goal of cooling the planet.
Clarify, so 10 megatons of aluminum dumped into the atmosphere would have no human health impact.
So there would be more chemicals here. Or to separate out the toxicological from the aluminum, we've all be begun to research and knowledge about it.
There was mason jars, and they were brand new, sterilized, and that's what we catch the rain in.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a HEPA filter that we tested the air with.
Okay, so you caught rain, and then you basically filtered air. What did you find?
Aluminum.
We have enough anything in the area of aluminum, and so there could be something terrible that will find tomorrow we have.
But this is virtually exactly what the geoengineers described and did describe in the conference, as you know, as the result of spraying aerosols, a white haze that would eliminate our blue skies. It's exactly what we see. So it's baffling to many of us how people can not give this issue the serious attention that it deserves when it's virtually everything the scientific community is describing as something they urgently want to do, but they still don't admit they are doing.
So this is being done over our farms and over our things. So basically they want to eliminate our ability to eat organic food, have clean water. So it, in some ways it sounds to me like, and you know, again, it's just a projection, but it sounds to me like this is control. How do we control the masses?
What shows you can make very high quality and do this in just a jet in a very simple way. Make high quality aluminum particles just by spraying aluminum vapor out, which I'll tell you. So it's certainly in principle possible to do that. There's a big literature that's already looked at that.
What LA
aerosol geoengineering looks like, it is so cheap that the cost is basically not going to be an issue. That means an implementation decision will be risk-to-risk decision. The risk of doing it against the risk of not doing it. And it makes the problem of how we govern it fundamentally harder and different than normal. So I've told you that it's cheap to deliver materials to stratosphere, and I'm convinced that's true. I don't think that will change. But I think the more we do research, the less easy this will look, the more complicated the environmental effects will look. And that's a good thing, because right now it looks too easy. So I think that if we do more research, we're likely to find out that it's harder and more complicated than we thought, and that side effects are harder to manage, and that's a healthy outcome that will make it easier to do the magic. It's an empirical question how people will actually react to knowledge about this. Another reaction is to say, if these crazy scientists are so concerned about putting CO2 in the atmosphere, they want to
carry it.
And that might actually mean we should be more serious about the risk of CO2 in the atmosphere. And by the way, it's not really a moral hazard. It's more likely to be riding
on our ground. It's a complete asshole.
And by the way, it's not really a moral hazard. It's more likely to be riding on our ground.
When I have a friend who builds organic art, and across the industry, they're seeing a decline in anything natural and organic that's growing. However, the effective crops have the aluminum-resistant seeds that have been manufactured.
So part of the genetically modified crops includes a conscious effort to make those seeds and those crops resistant to aluminum. Is that what you're saying? Well, this is not an accident. So those people know what's going on. Not only do they know what's going on, but they intend to benefit from it.
They already are.
They've been. That's why we have to get this information out there. We can't let another decade go by without anyone doing anything.
And I don't see how anybody who's and got their eyes open and their mind open can come to any other conclusion but that somebody spending a lot of money and effort to spray the planet. I know that whenever it's finally discovered, and it will be, The people who are doing it will undoubtedly say, oh, well, we did it for you folks. It's for the greater good of the greater number. It's for the society. It's probably to prevent global warming. But in my humble opinion, it's not in your good or mine. I don't know what it is, but we'll soon find out.
Paul and I are very excited to announce our new co-producer, the world-renowned G. Edward Griffin. Not only does he bring years of experience in issues like this, but also credibility from his countless numbers of works. We're very excited to have his involvement with Reality Zone, which will give us avenues to distribute this out to millions of people.
It's long past time to make this issue known to the public. There have been many videos made. There have been many statements made. A lot of websites put on the internet exposing the truth about this issue, but none of them have really put it all together. And it's past time for that to happen. That's the reason I'm very, very happy to become associated with these young men that have taken it upon themselves to produce this documentary to be called What in the World Are They Spraying? It's a perfect title, and I think they have the expertise to do it right. They have the knowledge, they have the right outlook, and I'm just glad to be a part of it. They can't do it alone, and I can't do it alone with them. We need your help. We've got to get it out. We've got to get it out fast. Funding will be necessary for this project. It's already half done, but the rest of it needs to be done. It needs to be done quickly. So when you see that little website come across the screen in a moment, or perhaps now, that's the place to go if you want to become a part of this project yourself and really help to make a difference in the world. We need your help. Thank you.
RealityZone.com, coming fall 2010. That is the documentary.
So that's the website, Reality Zone. What are they spraying? So go to the realityzone.com. So what else do we have here, Leo?
Oh, we got a whole bunch of stuff. Hey, this guy is always getting big stuff. We need a little madness, or we dare not cut the rope and be free. Zorba's dance, including the barbecue party. You remember that?
No.
This is probably good. We need a little madness to beat the dare not. Yes. Anybody ever see Zorba the Greek? One of my favorite.
Lord Monckton wins global warming debate at Oxford Union.
For what is believed to be the first time ever in England, an audience of university undergraduates has decisively rejected the notion that global warming is or could become a global crisis. The only previous defeat for climate extremism among an undergraduate audience was at St. Andrews University, Scotland, in the spring of 2009, when the climate extremists were defeated by 3 votes. And, Lord Monckton is...
The big lie, selling you war with North Korea.
I'm going to advise you, go to davidicke.com, all right, check out this a very important...
Obama to snatch up of 75% of your income. Just read what it says under there.
If the President Obama repeals the Bush tax cuts and imposes a 20% valued added tax, or VAT, on the U.S. Americans may be facing tax rates where more than half of everything earned is confiscated by the federal government in the form of income tax. Jerome Corsi's Red Alert report. Add Social Security taxes and the tax burden quickly advances to more than 60%. Adding state property and income taxes to the burden, the amount government confiscates could be in the 75% range. Before Americans have a chance to vote Obama out of office in 2012, are Americans willing to be taxed 75% of every dollar earned? I don't think so. There's so much here, and I wanted to get to this interview.
Yeah.
Al Gore global warming alarmist running for cover after climate gate. But unfortunately, you got this climate gate, and people that know there is no climate gate, there is no climate warm global warming crap. All right, but people are shooting up this this aluminum in our skies every single day.
Why don't you get
this,
you
know?
Started there.
It's really quite a frightening thing.
Hmm. Well, why don't you see if your interview
that makes sense.
Is ready?
The Obama administration defends BP response to oil.
Yeah, they're defending BP's response, their lack of response to the global, to the oil disaster. The government is defending BP.
In the Zionist entity, the authorities and public would prefer to outlaw human rights organizations in Israel. All right. So we're going to go back to you. We're going to go to our interview. Excuse me a second. And
so is it all queued up?
Yep. And
ready to go.
It's about half an hour. So I hope you enjoy it. It's with Nick Bryant on the Franklin Scandal.
And the Franklin Scandal is a book that's just been has been out for a while, and it's a story of power brokers, child abuse, and betrayal. And you recognize a lot of names when you start talking about it.
How you doing, Nick?
Not too bad. How are you doing?
All right.
Oh, good. Welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
I forgot to mention I have a co-host here, Lila, and I spoke to you earlier today, but I was really shocked by the book. I had known about the scandal. I read about it prior, but, you know, what bothered me most, Nick, was that, you know, it kind of died. You know what I mean? Kind of died in the water. And you got all these criminals still walking around, you know, and guys like George H.W. Bush, or George H. Bush, you know. And
not a lot of justice.
Guys like Barney Franks, you know. Other people that are neck deep in this cesspool of child abuse and criminal activity, and yet these guys are still walking around and being honored by this country. Right? How do you reconcile with that as a journalist and as a guy who wrote this book?
Well, there are a lot of perpetrators whose names I did not mention in the book, and it's very difficult for me to look at them walking around and having parks and highways and airports named after them. Yeah. It's very difficult. Unfortunately, the mainstream media was very much at fault with the Franklin scandal as far as its reportage. On basically, the government said that there was no pedophile network that was flying children from coast to coast, and the mainstream media took the government's words either through omission or commission, hook, line, and sinker.
Right.
So you have a collusion between the government and also the mainstream media, which is why the scandal never really impacted the headlines like it should have.
Can you refresh our audience a little bit about what this scandal is?
Sure. The Franklin Scandal is a book I wrote, and it was about an interstate pedophile network that flew kids from coast to coast and pandered them to the rich and powerful. And the scandal was nearly exposed. The ring operated throughout the 1980s, and the ring was nearly exposed, or the network was nearly exposed in 1989-1990. But its exposure would have had seismic political aftershocks, because a lot of these kids had been flown to Washington, D.C. in a house that was wired for audiovisual blackmail. A lot of these illicit parties occurred in this house, and there were high-ranking members of Congress and within the Reagan and Bush administrations that were compromised by this network. So if it had been exposed in 1990-1991, then most likely would have been a complete there would have been so much outrage by the American public that I do not think that the George Herbert Walker Bush administration would have survived. So it had to be covered up at all costs, and ultimately there were three grand juries that were hijacked to basically sell the public the government's line. And I know it sounds kind of mind-boggling that three grand juries had been hijacked to cover this up, but it was people at the Department of Justice, I mean, at the pinnacle of power in the Department of Justice, and also the FBI and Secret Service that went into a full court press to cover this up. So there was a tremendous amount of power applied to make sure that all the kids were canted. There were ultimately six kids that came forward. The ring had been operational for about 10 years or so, and it had destroyed many more than six kids. But six kids summoned the gumption and temerity to come forward in the face of tremendous FBI hostility. And ultimately, all the perpetrators were not indicted by the grand juries, but a couple of the kids refused to recant, and two of them were indicted for perjury by a state grand jury, and one of them was indicted for perjury by a federal grand jury. And a girl who had been enmeshed in this pedophile network since she was in early adolescence ultimately came forward when she was 21, and that's when she was indicted. She was indicted on 8 counts of perjury by a federal grand jury and 8 counts of perjury by a state grand jury. And the state tried her first, state of Nebraska, and she was sentenced to between 9 and 15 years for perjury. We're talking a kid here. Refused to recant.
She refused to recant is why they charged her.
Is she still in prison?
No, she
was let out in 2000, and she's actually graduated from college summa cum laude, is happily married, and she's very successful in the profession that she's chosen.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, did she have multiple personality disorder like so many of these kids?
No, she did not have. There was only one of the victims that came forward that had multiple personality disorder, but most of the kids had been just really heavily abused, by very sadistic pedophiles, and they'd been turned on to drugs at a very young age. So, and that's the built-in concealment mechanism that this network had, and most networks like it, is that these kids, a lot of these kids come from lower socioeconomic backgrounds. A lot of them come from dysfunctional homes. Some of the kids were plundered out of orphanages. Some of the kids out of foster care homes, and some of them were just runaways that had fallen through the cracks.
Well, I think you should mention definitely the boy town, the boys town, and how involved they were.
Four of the six kids that came forward said that Boystown kids were involved in this pedophile network, and I did acquire the sealed grand jury documentation and testimony of one of the grand juries, and it gave me a list of about 60 victims.
Wow.
And approximately 10 of those victims were Boystown kids, and I did find four Boystown kids who were willing to talk to me about this network and its plundering of Boystown.
Yeah, you mentioned them, but you actually have pictures of them in your book. But I was... Getting back to this, you involved in the Finders group. This is a group of people that were there are actually out there, a satanic group of people that are actually out there picking up these kids, looking for kids, and harboring them, putting them into in their homes, in their house, or their warehouses or whatever, brutalizing them and then selling them out. Now, the CIA and the FBI and all of these other groups were all involved or all knew about these things but allowed them to continue.
Well, the FBI, the Department of Justice, and the Secret Service covered it up, and with the Finders, the CIA certainly squashed any investigation into the Finders, and with the Franklin Network, which I believe was a much bigger network than the Finders, there's a lot of I bring in a lot of compelling evidence that it was in fact certainly one of the pedophilic pimps in that network was a CIA asset, and I've got corroboration that that the blackmail equipment in his Washington D.C. home was actually CIA too. So yes, you do have the CIA.
Now, was that Larry King or was that?
That was Craig Smith.
Okay, Craig Smith.
There were two pedophilic pimps, Lawrence King out of Omaha, Nebraska, Craig Spence out of Washington, D.C. They ran the pedophile network together.
Right.
Now, because all of this was covered up and only some of the people were found guilty,
actually, the state concluded and the feds concluded that no children had been abused whatsoever. There was no children abused.
Nope.
Lawrence King did go to jail for embezzling $40 million from the Franklin Credit Union. But according to federal and state law enforcement, there was no pedophile network and not a single child was abused.
Does that mean that this is still continuing?
I believe that it is continuing. continuing. And I've gotten anecdotal reports of networks like this. I've been working, I've been in this dark universe for about 8 years, and I've certainly received a lot of anecdotal reports that large pedophile networks like this are still present and operational. But I think a real strong indicator of that is, depending upon what group you talk to, there are between 100 and 300,000 American children trafficked domestically every year. And there's never been a large network that's ever been busted trafficking kids in the United States of America. It's always somebody who lives in a trailer court smoking crack with two teenage girls.
Right.
So, given that 100 to 300,000 children are being, American children are being trafficked domestically every year, and nobody's getting busted for conducting these big rings or overseeing these big rings, I think it's a pretty strong indictment that it still continues to this day.
And
do you think it's still continuing in Washington, D.C., where our Congress and our politicians and high-placed officials are being compromised?
In the Franklin scandal, I talk about a house in Washington, D.C. that was owned by Craig Spence, and a lot of these pedophilic parties occurred there. And but if you wanted adults, I mean, Craig Spence spent $20,000 a month on male and female escorts that weren't minors, too. So whatever you wanted, it would be provided. If you wanted a child, they would provide you with a child. But if you wanted a young woman in her 20s or a young man in his 20s, that would certainly be provided to you. Illicit drugs would be provided. Whatever it would take to compromise someone, whatever tickled their fancy, I mean, it would be provided for them. And one of the arguments that I make in my book is that because the feds came down on this so hard to vaporize it and put anybody that was in the ring in jail, and also terrorized any victims from coming forward, and the ones that did come forward were ultimately indicted for perjury, and didn't recant were ultimately indicted for perjury. I mean, I think a pretty strong case that they were protecting a system of blackmail and compromise that's very active in the United States today. A system of blackmail and compromise that if the American people ever knew about it, there would be such outrage that lot of our politicians would be sent home.
Well, J. Edgar Hoover was, you know, he started this. He was blackmailing everybody. He had tapes and recordings on everybody, especially at Kennedy's. But,
sexual compromise has been around forever, and videotape and audio tape are relatively new to sexual compromise, but I think it's been something that's been with us for quite some time.
I wish that you would discuss the Barney Franks his involvement with this, okay, to clarify for everybody, because you mentioned him quite a bit in the D.C. section there. How is he? The fact that he's still a congressman and a powerful one
blows
me away, especially after he was known to be involved with this thing. He actually was running escorts out of his own house, I believe. All right.
Actually, someone else was running escorts out of his own home.
Well, it was in his house.
Right.
Like he didn't know about it, Like he had nothing to do. He was the head of the banking committee, and he didn't know anything of it. This came as a total shock to him, this collapse. All right, so either the guy is a complete and utter moron, all right, or he's an absolute lying sack of crap. Okay, and the fact that he's out there, and the fact that he is still in power, just amazes me. Okay. That this can happen. And what? Reconcile that? And have you done anything other than writing the book? Have you contacted anybody trying to get this guy indicted? All right. For being an all-around...
The Franklin scandal is so anathema to most Americans. I basically say that the corrupt subgenus of the federal government is aiding and abetting the trafficking, the sexual trafficking of children.
Absolutely.
That is such an explosive, mind-boggling, shocking premise that most people don't want to embrace it. And I understand that, because I didn't want to embrace it either. I mean, I didn't want to think that this story was real.
See, I believed it the first time I heard it about George H. Bush. All right, I could believe anything about him. All right, and G.W. Bush. Okay, when the thing came out with Jeff Gannon. All right, didn't surprise me one bit. Okay, that he was.
But that also quickly sort of just disappeared.
Oh, yeah.
And
it all went away.
Nothing happened with that either.
I mean, why is it that the Bush family is Teflon? I mean, you know, they obviously have dirt all over them. They've got, you know, crap all over them, and they walk around smelling up the joint, but nobody will touch these guys. You know,
power.
And they got plenty of defenders. Oh, we love George Bush. You know. So I just beyond me how this happens and continues to happen, and the indictment of the mainstream media is just unbelievable how they've allowed everything to get them to get away with everything. What's been the response to your book? Have you been ignored quite a bit? Or
I hope there's been a lot of outrage.
Well, I've been heavily ignored, and unfortunately, I tried to get the book. I live in New York City, and I tried to get the book published by a mainstream publisher centered in New York City, but no one would touch it. And I understand it has a very shocking message, but I am ultimately talking about the destruction of untold numbers of children.
Oh, God.
And it was published by a smaller publisher on the West Coast, but I felt I really, because I live in the epicenter of media in New York City, I really felt that I had the connections in the mainstream media, enough friends in the mainstream media that I could give the book to and that we'd get some traction with it. But unfortunately, the mainstream media has, up to this point, ignored the story. And I've gotten books to a lot of people in the mainstream media, television, the print media, and it's been a little disheartening, but I keep plugging forward. I mean, like I said, the story is very shocking and it's very mind-boggling, but it is true, and in my book I prove it. And my book basically diagnoses a disease in our society. It's the disease of child trafficking being presented by the government, and a disease of our politicians being compromised.
I don't, quite frankly, know which is the worst horror: the scandal that you expose, or the fact that people are ignoring the scandal that you've exposed.
And yet, at the same time, he's screaming all over the place about pedophiles, you know, or sex offenders here in the neighborhood, sex offenders there, sex offenders.
Well, as long as they're not among the rich and powerful, it's all right.
But yet you got known pedophiles, known sex offenders in Congress that keep getting reelected. All right, it's just beyond me. And they don't have any criminal records, right? Even though they've been indicted hundreds of times over this stuff. Everybody knows these guys. All right. Look at all the Republicans that went down back in 2006. For their sexual innuendos there. You know, remember the guy? I forgot Foley, the guy who was playing around with the pages, or what's his name? Larry Craig, the guy who was
toe tapper,
and all of these other things that the press jumped on. But here you got something so horrendous. All right. That goes right up to the top of the government, okay? That, you know, it's just mind-boggling that and it's totally and completely ignored by the media.
So your friends in the media, when you, I'm sure you must ask them, why is this being ignored, or why won't you take this? What do they say back to you?
No one has ever given me a reason why. I think that they know that they're doing the wrong thing, and that.
Hold on one second, I'll just turn this over.
Tells prior, but after I read the book, I started reading about all the people that were getting killed and all the stuff that was happening to anybody who was investigating or bringing this stuff up. It made me a little nervous, okay? And I said, geez, I can't imagine how you were able to pull this off without getting shot yourself, all right? You must have had some moments there, you know?
Well, I only had one overt death threat, but I've had a lot of harassment.
Yeah.
I think the people that gave me the death threat and harassed me felt that if they put enough heat on me, that would kind of be the end of it. But I mean, I've written a lot on children's issues, and this, once I realized that this was a reality, I decided that it was something I had to go for. And but it was almost impossible for me to get this story. I mean, I had to acquire sealed grand jury documentation, which is very difficult to really nail this story.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to get a lot of people to talk who'd never talked. So it was almost impossible for me to get this story. And then there was only one publisher in the country that would publish the story. And they just happened to live like 3,500
miles. Seattle, yeah.
But we managed to find each other. So the chances of the Franklin scandal, the book coming out, were so exponentially small that I think that the people who harassed me thought that I could never pull it off, or that it could never be pulled off.
Right.
But it's out there, and your listeners can buy it. And what I need is enough people to buy this book so they can understand what our political system is about, and that all these children have been destroyed, and yet no one has paid a price for it. And we are donating 50% of the book's proceeds to charities that assist abused children. So it's not only is it a good investment as far as someone's personal edification, but 50% of the proceeds are going to children's charities.
Right.
Oh, that's a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah. I like I said, I was totally amazed by the number of people who tried to break this, and the investigators that really worked hard, as yourself, to do this. But there were a number of people that were mysteriously killed, and one of them was the former CIA director Colby. Okay, was involved.
William Colby was tangentially involved in this case, and
right.
I kind of make a pretty strong case in my book that there was some extreme foul play in William Colby's mysterious demise.
Why the only one.
I mean, there's two or three people that died mysteriously in a chapter. I mean, it's very strange that way.
Well, the story of Cordero, was it? Or, I forgot his name, the guy who died in the plane crash.
Gary Caradori. He was the Senate, the Nebraska Senate started to investigate this pedophile network because no one was
right.
investigating it. Social services had alerted both state and federal law enforcement to the fact that there was this interstate pedophile network, but neither state nor federal law enforcement acted. They just simply ignored Nebraska social services,
and that was because they were a part of it.
Yes, and then Nebraska Social Service finally got the ear of some state senators who had formed a subcommittee, and then these state senators started to investigate it, and then ultimately the feds and the state had to respond with grand juries to keep it covered up, and the state investigator died mysteriously. His plane broke up mysteriously, and I proved that he had gotten some pretty irrefutable evidence of this pedophile network in Chicago, and he was flying back from Chicago when his plane mysteriously broke up over Lee County, Illinois.
Hmm. Right, and there were several other people that were killed as well along the way, but mysteriously killed. But I think what bothered me the most, what disturbed me the most about this, was how widespread it was. Okay, how widespread it is, and the hypocrisy, if you will, of the American people, the society, the mainstream media, the publishing media, all of these. So it made me realize that, I can't blame the American public because they're not that bright when it comes to stuff like this. They'd rather blame.
They're just not. I mean, there's no edification because the mainstream media isn't covering it. I mean,
the mainstream media will cover any kind of pedophilic news item anywhere. Okay, this teacher did that, or that guy did this, or this neighbor did that, or whatever it is. Okay?
But they're not connected to the powerful.
Exactly.
Well, no, I mean, the news media, I mean, we hear it all the time in Connecticut, and I'm sure everywhere else in the national news. There's, I mean, Nancy Grace has made a name for herself from bashing pedophiles, you know what I mean? So it's like...
Well, her producers, actually two of her producers have my book, and she's never called me.
There you go.
Well, as you mentioned in your opening first words, it only seems to get on the media if it's some guy in a trailer smoking crack with two teenage girls. You're absolutely right.
Well, what about the guy, Mark Walsh, okay, and Most Wanted, America Most Wanted, all right? You know, have you sent him a book?
I think we're in the process of sending him a book right now, or sending one of his producers.
I'd be very, very curious to see what his reaction would be, because he just got some kind of a national award for being such a great hero. And I'm not denying that his stuff is good, but it'd be very interesting to see his reaction to your book. All right, and it just staggers my imagination, okay, that these people, these great defenders of justice, okay, and children, we'll just ignore this, the biggest story in American history, okay, the biggest crime going on. It just blows my mind. It just totally blows my mind. You know, that you're being ignored like this, and that story was so ignored, and that people like George W. Bush and George H.W. Bush and Jeb Bush and that whole damn corrupt family, okay, still has so much power and influence.
Well, this goes far beyond the Bushes.
It's
part of it's been part of a number of administrations, and unfortunately,
how far does it go back? By the way, I mean this stuff probably goes back even into the beyond Bush, beyond earlier than Bush. No.
Yes. I mean, the rich, the very powerful, I mean, pedophilia is a crime that certainly cuts across socioeconomic demographics, but the rich have had an affinity for children. I mean, that's
right.
Been told many, many times, and with the new technology of flying kids around and videotape, it takes that type of blackmail to a whole new level. And because in my book, when I acquired that sealed grand jury documentation, I acquired about 200 flight receipts, and the vast majority of them do go to Washington, D.C., from Omaha, Nebraska to Washington, D.C. And some of them, the victims that I talked to, were flown to Washington, D.C. and pattered there, and then others were flown to New York, others were flown to Chicago, others were flown to Denver, others were flown to L.A.
Now, I've read this and numerous times about European pedophile rings that are sponsored by the government. Okay, there. I mean, these guys are they're catering major government officials in Europe. Okay, and of course, Asia is notorious for it as well. And it made me laugh. I swear to God, it made me laugh when I saw George H. W. Bush and Bill Clinton go to Bangkok, Thailand. You know,
one wonders why they went.
Yeah, well, they supposedly went on a diplomatic mission, but you wonder how many little girls they groped while they were there. It's a sick thing. And unless people understand how sick it really is and believe it, but Christ, people barely believe that. They think Obama's a wonderful guy. They think some people still pray for the return of George W. Bush. It's unbelievable. I give you a lot of credit, guy Nick, because I would go nuts if I was investigating this thing and getting completely ignored like you have been.
Well, I believe that what I've done is the right thing, and I believe that in my heart, and I believe that the truth will eventually get out. I may be an optimist, and I may be delusional, but these are things that I believe. And if your listeners, if they really want to read a very edifying book, it's a tragic book, but it's a very edifying book.
And loaded with documents as well, so I just wanted to tell people that we're not just whistling Dixie here.
So how may our listeners get your book, Nick?
Yeah.
You can go to my website, www.franklinscandal.com, one word, franklinscandal.com.
Right.
And you can take a look at my website, and you can take a look at the trailer of the documentary that I'm currently working on. And I'm also, I've also got a documentary that was made about this, and it was going to be shown in the United Kingdom on the Discovery Channel. It was called Conspiracy of Silence. That's kind of an interesting documentary. It was never shown. The Discovery Channel pulled the plug on it.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of interesting information on my website. And you can also order the book there, too.
And can you get it? You can order it there. You can order it on Amazon, I guess. Barnes.
Yeah, there's a lot of the, you can also order it on
all your normal places, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, Nick, I want to thank you so much for your time, and I hope that we get the word out a little bit here tonight. And I've got to tell everybody that the book is worth the investment, and it's a nice hardcover book, and I think it's $24.95 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And
very good price. Yes.
Yeah, good price. Good for a good book.
It's
so
shocking, and it certainly holds your attention, and it also tells us a lot about our government, and
yeah,
that's something we should all know.
Sure does. So thank you, Nick. Is there anything else you want to tell anybody, or is there anything you want to say?
I just want to say that this is a very heinous crime, and the more people that read the book, we can get a critical mass of Americans to truly understand what the problem is, and then we can go to work on the solution.
All right.
Okay. We agree with you, and thanks
okay.
so much,
thanks
Nick.
Thanks so much, Nick. And
okay. Have a good night.
Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye.
That was Nick Bryant talking to us about his book, The Franklin Scandal, A Story of Power Brokers, Child Abuse and Betrayal, and he documents what's happened to some of these kids.
All right, that was that's the end of the program. We ran out of time, but I want to thank everybody for listening. Please check us out tomorrow night as well, Thursday night, delve into the fourth dimension. And please check out this book. It's a frightening indictment of some of the major players in this country right now, and ongoing, and it's a sick situation. So thanks for listening, and good night.